Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Actually, no, I'm going to scrap that. I realised this weekend just how seriously JB takes rugby. So let me set the scene. I was working at Newcastle against Toulon for BT Sport on Friday night, and we were off air at 10 p.m. At 10 p.m. exactly, as soon as he knew we were off air, JB bobbed me a little message saying, "Oh, can you get me Johnny Williams' phone number?" Because JB is constantly networking.
Never stop, never off duty.
And you're a big fan of Johnny Williams.
I'm a huge fan of Johnny Williams.
You are, yeah. Talking about for England.
Yeah.
He's a good lad. Or Scotland or Wales.
Tell you what, you, him and Rob did a really good job on Friday.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, he was a nice guy. Anyway, so that was at 10 p.m. And then it's only the following day I realised that, oh, hold on a minute. JB was texting me just a few hours after the birth of his second child.
That is correct, yeah. Well, you know, she was born. You know, she's stayed over a few nights in hospital, but I was home watching the rugby and, you know, Johnny Williams is there, you're there. You seemed like, you know...
Always working.
Even weirder, before the game on Friday, I had a long day at work, went and did a quick half an hour watt bike session, and as I was leaving the gym to go and watch the game... Who do I see in the gym? Maybe not even hours, plural, after the birth of his second child. But JB, so not only do you take rugby very, very seriously, you also take your impeccable physique very seriously.
And actually my club rugby too, because I managed to play against Widnes as well.
Remarkable.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Obviously. Yes. And I will get you that number. I've got a little game to kick off the podcast, which... Obviously, we're going to feature the final round of pool matches in the European Champions Cup, Challenge Cup as well. We will touch on now and looking ahead to the quarterfinals. There was an England squad announced, other international pre-Six Nations squads announced. There's some various other stories and rumours and whatnot. But I want to start with one little question.
Okay.
So, and this is a kind of a rugby social light because it's just one question and it comes via Will Greenwood. Now, in Will Greenwood's Instagram stories, he...
How Will Greenwood, fan of mind-altering party drugs, Will Greenwood?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Never mind.
There was a couple of good Instagram stories.
Yeah, never mind. Don't worry about it.
Oh, sorry. I probably made a joke now look really horrible.
Yeah.
He definitely wasn't on drugs, by the way. He just completed a very tough CrossFit workout.
Oh, yes, I remember now.
He does not do mind-altering party drugs.
Anyway, what phrase did he use that could be motivation for our week ahead?
Oh, this is so Will Greenwood.
Did he? Well, oh, okay. Guess before I even give you some options. Go on.
Oh, God. This is so him at the moment. He loves his work from now.
Yeah. So it might motivate us for the week ahead. He just finished a workout and he's used a phrase that it's like, remember, and then he said a phrase. Just wondered if he thought it might... I thought it might work as a Monday motivation if you're listening on a Monday.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone's tuned into the brand new Chris Evans Breakfast Show on Virgin Radio, which starts Monday the 21st of January.
Is it something like... I mean, like the women's equivalent of like this would be something like moment on the lips, lifetime on the hips, that kind of motivation. Is it something along those lines? Is it nice and snappy?
I'll tell you what, I'll give you three options.
Go on then.
Do you think it is embrace the pain, get up and go again, or nothing less than everything?
Oh.
Ooh.
Nothing less than everything.
I was going to say that one.
I mean, that's just so... If you watch his Instagram, that's so him.
I'd have to say the same.
We'd all feel like this week. Whatever job you do, whatever training you do, get up and go again.
Get
get so, do you know I was mentioning the mind-altering party drugs and you didn't get it?
That is very reminiscent of his last one, actually.
It sounds kind of sinister, doesn't it? If I said, have you seen that that little Instagram story from that guy who's up for murder?
We all feel like this week. Whatever job you do, whatever training you do,
however many you've killed,
get up and go again.
It's like,
I like
it. It's like fun. Apocalypse Now or something.
Yeah, I like it.
The things that I saw in Nam.
It's kind of like he just cleared out his second trench in the Battle of Verdun.
What I like about it is it's authentic.
Oh, well, he's definitely massively into his CrossFit.
I reckon,
right, when you are such a high-level athlete as he's been in the past, I don't think that ever leaves you, that desire to work out and compete.
100%. 100%. Yeah, totally. I agree. So there you go. I thought that to kick off the podcast might be motivation. So whatever job you do, get up and go again.
Get up.
Get up and go again.
Go again.
I'll remember that.
Well, let's get up and go again.
So do you want to start with Champions Cup or do you want to start with England squad?
England squad's more fun.
Yeah, let's do that then.
Is Champions Cup more fun?
No, because we can knock the England squad. It's not going to take too long, is it?
Yeah, I think we go Champions Cup. I think we start off chronologically from the big games.
Oh, okay.
So, obviously, the biggest game of the weekend was Newcastle Toulon, Tim.
Of course. Which I'm sure everyone... Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for that. Yeah. That was the big one. That was... I could not feel my face. It was so cold.
I'm amazed how cold you broadcasters get. I last time I was cold, it was like 1989 or something. You're always whinging about being cold.
I know. Tough.
You always go on about how you don't feel the cold.
Certainly not like these guys, and there's several layers.
I'm sure there's some scientific reason for that. Like Neil Hatley. How does Neil Hatley...
He wears shorts all the time.
Yeah, shorts and a short-sleeve T-shirt, and he sat next to Eddie Jones at watching matches, and Eddie Jones... Hat, snood, massive coat, gloves.
Eddie Jones is a tiny, tiny man, though. That's what you've got to remember.
It's all about insulation.
It is. Neil Hatley's a big bloke.
Very well insulated.
Very well insulated.
But doesn't that mean he's got more surface area through which to lose body
heat?
Well,
we had this argument the other day, actually. And no, it's not like that. Me and Ollie Poole, friend of the podcast. Ollie is actually right on this, because...
It's the ratio.
It's the ratio. That's why...
The surface area to volume.
That's why whales are so massive and live in the Arctic.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And they all also have a thick layer of insulation.
Indeed.
In Wales.
Neil Hatley, back off to Bath is the word.
Yeah.
That's a great signing if that happens.
It would be a very good signing. So, yeah, Friday night, the other game.
The other game, the big game. So this was to decide who tops the pool and who goes through. Yeah. And there was only one winner, and it was a hell of a performance by Edinburgh.
Yeah, loved it. I thought they could do it. I kind of wondered a week before last if they were talking themselves out of winning with the whole, this is going to be the biggest result in our history. Well, actually, it wasn't. I think this one justifiably is, though.
Yes, and getting the quarterfinal spot and getting a home quarterfinal spot.
Massive.
A group with Toulon, admittedly they're not the Toulon of a few years ago, but it is still Toulon and they are one of the most expensive teams in Europe. And Montpellier, who might actually be the most expensive and the most massive. And just the names on the team sheet of that Montpellier team is unbelievable. Mm. But Edinburgh bullied them.
They did, actually.
Their scrum, the Edinburgh scrum, Schumann and WP Nell, did an absolute number on World Cup winning. I mean, Yanni Duplessis, you got taken off after half an hour, a World Cup winning tight head with... probably 50 plus, 80 plus caps for South Africa.
Now, is this Schumann fella? I mean, he's Western Province originally. Are they looking at him as some sort of project player? I know that you're well into project players, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine they've got an eye on that. He's got an eye on that. So he is only 24.
Yeah.
He's absolutely enormous.
He is. Yeah. Bloody good carrier. I thought McAnally was excellent. I think Toulis grows every game.
I thought, so it was interesting that it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, you commented on WP Nell saying he's such an old school scrummager.
Okay, let me clarify
this. Then...
He is an old school scrummager.
He absolutely is an old school scrummager. But it was almost like he was listening to you and just saying, look at all the other tricks I've got in
hold
my
book. Hold my base. This.
Yeah, the offload, the through the legs pass, the meter's made, defender's beaten.
Now, I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. Does this Edinburgh team remind you of where Glasgow were 3 years ago? Or 4 years ago?
It does seem there's similarities, certainly.
I mean, they've got the offloading magical Fijian.
Yeah.
It's all based around a good, tough forward pack.
I think their pack is better than where Edinburgh were.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
But they don't have like the likes of... So Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg are world class. I'm not saying DeWalt and Kinghorn.
DeWalt is very
not,
good. Yeah,
it's not that they're not good players, but they're nowhere near... Yet, they're nowhere near Russell and Hogg.
And also, both teams have and play Henry Purgos, which is the other thread here. But it just feels like, you know, they're a little bit underrated unless you know what you're talking about, unless you've watched them. And they're going from strength, and they're going from strength to strength.
Richard Cockerell must be giggling, sitting back and looking at the Premiership and its performance in Europe and sitting where he is.
Yeah.
Like he would be deservedly. He deserves the right to sit back, laugh, and feel very smug.
It's a weird one, isn't it? It's a weird one. Yeah, I still think they were right to fire him.
Yeah, yeah. I'd even knowing all the amazing work he's doing at Edinburgh,
maybe
we'll continue
break
to
is
do.
Good, change but, as good as a break. Or
I understand it at the time. I was never in favour of getting rid of Cockerell, but I was very aware at the time that was just very biased because I think he's an absolutely brilliant bloke. Mm. And much like, you know, JB with Steve Diamond.
Whoa, there's no bias there, what? Tim.
No bias at all.
Did you catch a Steve Diamond interview?
Very good. I would recommend listening to Rugby Dungeon. Where's your little bell? Come
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Little bell's on the floor. Down there. Why haven't you got a sound effect one?
Yeah, have you not got an electronic?
I probably have somewhere. Nope.
No.
Mine is you, Steve Diamond. yes.
Anyway,
what was I saying?
So Richard Cockerell, what a job!
Yeah, brilliant,
truly amazing job. And the guys in—you look at the team sheet, and yes, Mata now is a star, and McAnally is a very good player. Hamish Watson is a very good player. Kinghorn, decent player.
Well, I mean, Kinghorn,
Van der Merwe on the wing is sensational, but none of these.
Another thing, they've got a wing called Van der Merwe. So that's
another massive parallel to Glasgow. But those guys, so they are playing phenomenally well. Before this season, how many of those have you actually heard of?
Very few. Very few.
And the other guys, I mean, the two centres, Dean and Johnston, they were very, very solid, making breaks, defensively very good against a very competent, very dangerous Montpellier backline.
More importantly on Dean... If you were Chris Dean, wouldn't you just insist on being called Christopher Dean?
It's
Christine.
Dean.
It's Christine. You just sound like...
Oh, Christine. Not like Chris... I thought you were making...
Christine.
I thought you were making a reference then to the 90s skating duo, Torval and Dean, because he was Christopher Dean.
He was Christopher, but he was Christopher Dean.
Yeah, so it's not Christine and Jane Torval.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. I said the other guy I liked. He wasn't quite as prominent this week as he was last week, but I think Darcy Graham's class.
Yeah.
So fast. And
he's
so
a hot
small.
Stepper.
Yeah. He didn't get too many. I mean, yeah, he didn't get too many opportunities. He finished the try well, didn't he?
Mm.
But
it is amazing, right? Because if you look at, in particular, the Montpellier back row. I love this Montpellier back row. I think your Cuba Camara is an absolute weapon. Pickamalls has long been my favourite player.
Yeah.
And they just got no luck. I say no luck. They weren't allowed any luck.
If you're going to pick someone to like go into the Colosseum as a gladiator on behalf of your tribe or whatever, Yakuba Kamara is the sort of guy you would pick.
He's up there.
Yeah.
He's certainly
up
there.
And so is Louis Pickamalls.
Mm. So, yeah, it's a hell of a win. I wonder how far they can go now. I mean, I see their chances roughly similar to that of Munster, which is they can beat... pretty much anyone on their day. Incredibly dangerous team, but maybe not the overall favourites.
Yeah, well, they've got themselves fourth place in the seedings, which are massively important for them having a home quarter final.
Oh, and Murrayfield, I mean, it was nowhere near full, but at least they got two sides relatively full. I think that made a hell of a difference too.
Mm.
Yeah, it looked like a good atmosphere, although it takes a lot to fill a 70,000 seat stadium.
Yeah, about 70,000 people.
even 20,000 people will be a good effort, but still won't be. I mean, that new ground can't come quick enough. We said that before. But yeah. Absolutely brilliant achievement.
Sensational.
And in doing so, securing Glasgow's position in the quarterfinals as well, regardless of their result against Saracens. And funny tweet from Edinburgh just saying, I think Richard Cockerill had said last week, we'll try and do a favour for our little brothers.
Bless them.
And then they
so sweet.
And then they posted a picture of their result and said, "You're welcome, little bro."
Oh,
so it's quite sweet. And also, you know, it's now more than just the rivalry. It's who's won. It's like, look at us. We're now number one in Scotland.
Yeah. Oh, well, these things matter. Rivalries matter.
They do.
Would you say that was the most important game of the weekend?
No, because Edinburgh still could have qualified even if they'd lost. In fact, bonus points would have had them qualifying for the quarterfinals. You can't underestimate the importance of a home quarterfinal, but I think Munster, Exeter, everything was on the line in that one. Well,
both of them were really important.
Yeah.
And those were the two biggest games. And I mean, it does. You mentioned Munster before, so Munster obviously now go on to travel to Edinburgh. But the Munster-Exeter game was
brutal.
It was the classic brutal. Unstoppable force meets immovable object.
Yeah.
Just two packs knocking lumps out of each other.
Yeah. I mean, I actually thought Exeter got the better of them in large phases, particularly the contact exchanges.
But Munster, I'm just not sure about that.
I think so.
They got a couple of times, but the number of either turnovers or ruck penalties that were given against Exeter. And what would happen was, the way I was watching it, Exeter would carry really hard and make minimal ground, but make some ground, 3, 4, 5, 6 phases. But because they would have to commit so heavily to each one of those phases to secure their own ball, which they normally do so easily, by the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th phase, it was easy pickings for Tyburn, Peter Omani, CJ Stander, Kilcoyne.
Tyburn was getting away with all sorts.
He was getting away with lots, I agree.
But like, you know, if the ref gives it, you're not getting away with it.
Jerome Garces did not have control of that game, for my liking. Well, it never spilled over, actually. So actually, that's fair. I'm wrong on that. I'll take that back.
I think he officiated the ruck the same way that 98% of referees.
Yeah, that's fair.
But there were some things. There was one where Harry Williams carries the ball in. Peter Romani's second man, so fully entitled to go. Ty Byrne even, second man, hooks his arm underneath Harry, hooks one arm underneath Harry Williams' body. So he's got the full 19 stone of Harry Williams. His other arm over the top. So he's got both arms round the whole weight of Harry Williams. And he's the one that wins the penalty. Now, as a Munster, so you never see that given, or you rarely see it given against the defensive player. As a Munster, if I were a Munster fan, I'd be saying, right on, absolutely, play to the referee, streetwise.
That's exactly what I think.
Brilliant, yeah.
You're a professional. If the referee officiates it that way, that's the law.
Absolutely, the law is how the referee interprets it. If I was an Exeter fan, I'd maybe be a little bit frustrated, but I thought Munster, they brilliantly played to the referees because they were right on the edge of those.
Do you know?
And also,
absolutely right.
Exeter had their chances, and just before half time, they got that line out stolen. I thought that was probably
because there was one before half time, the best one.
Yeah, the one before half time.
The best one was the Billy Holland one after
that's what
65, 66 minutes, which that was.
It's like his second play or something ridiculous.
That was unbelievable because that was.
So that was his first touch as well. Billy Holland came off the bench.
And
Tyke Byrne went off. Holland came on and did that.
Exeter had already shown that they can, from a 5 metre line out, they are pretty much unstoppable. So for Munster to put two jumpers up against it, and it was a gamble.
Yeah, it was a 50
because Exeter at that point were 1 point ahead. And if they score that try, they go 8 points ahead.
Yeah.
And that means that they're going through and Munster aren't. So it was such a gamble, but it was so well executed. To read it and then to pull it off, that was phenomenal.
There was a lot of box kicking in this game.
There was, and I actually thought that Nick White got the better of the box kicking.
I agree with that. And I thought Jack Noel did really well.
He did.
At fullback as well.
He did.
Is Jack Noll an option for you as England fullback?
Well, we'll get on to... we said last week, we can get onto the England squad in a bit, but we said last week that we wouldn't consider Jack Noll for fullback unless he played a lot there.
And I'm still with that.
Yeah.
He did play well in this game in difficult conditions. I still want to see more of him because Elliot Daly has played well in individual games and Anthony Watson has played well in individual games.
Here's one question then. Exeter had quite a lot of potentially kickable penalties. I think they would have won the game had they not had to win by more than seven. I think Exeter would have won the game because they would have taken those penalties and yeah. probably won by three or six or whatever. But they went for the jugular and it didn't come off. But that pressure, I we've said it before, and there's a lot of teams that do it, and fair play, Ulster did it in their game. They went for the corner a couple of times when maybe they could have taken points. And, I suppose it's easy. When it works, you go, great, well done. When it doesn't, you start scratching your head. But I remember thinking at the time, like, really? You're in Munster. 3 points is 3 points.
No, I'm with them. I think that's the way that they play. That's what they should do. And the pressure does build. I mean, look, the thing is about that style of play is you don't know when the dam is going to break. And we saw it against Saracens. Now, any normal thinking man in charge of a rugby team would go, hang on a minute, let's go and kick some points instead because we're just not breaking down Saracens. In the last, I think, 20 minutes, they finally get through. And I think that's the sort of game you've got to play. You've got to sort of toy with the opponent until they break.
And in fairness, if that was a Luke Carrondickie line-out, the Billy Holland stole, if that was 6 inches higher and it hits the jumper...
God, they're in.
It's try time. Because Munster have put two pods up.
Yep.
They had six men engaged in the lift. If that ball goes to Exeter, it is try. There is no way on earth Munster are stopping that.
It's also...
It was an all-or-nothing play for Munster. Yeah, it was a phenomenal play.
Yeah, you're right.
It's also fairly unique as well. I mean, you've got two options, haven't you? You can either copy the next best... Or you can do things completely your own way. And that's the extra way, and I love it. So, you know, they weren't good enough this year. They actually weren't good enough last year either. But I think it's John Madden on the America's Game thing. He said he said something along lines of, he never felt that he was under pressure because he's always getting to Super Bowls or playoffs or some such thing. And as long as they're in the Premiership playoffs, as long as they keep on getting into Europe and being competitive, eventually they will do all right.
I was listening to Keith Wood gave a talk at my workplace.
Did he? When was this?
Just before Christmas.
You kept that quiet.
Keith Wood and Joe Schmidt.
What? Hang on.
Hold
Did
on.
Did you go to this?
Hey, what?
Unfortunately, I couldn't go to it.
Oh.
It was down in head office down in Kent.
Because Ray's a big rugby fan, right?
Big rugby fan. And they gave basically a talk on kind of how they attack their work
and in return they were given a briefcase each. Anyway,
I'm sure they were compensated for their time.
They had lunch and mileage. That's great.
But Keith Wood referenced the preparation for the 2003 World Cup, and he was talking about Paul O'Connell, who was very young then.
Yeah.
But in the squad, and Paul O'Connell was, this is as Woody was telling it. So Paul O'Connell was kind of desperate to be number one in the world. And he was saying, like, we've got to train harder. How hard? Like, I know we're training unbelievably hard, but we've got to train harder. We've got to train more. We've got to do more. England are the best in the world. How far behind them do you think we are in terms of fitness? And Keith Wood, coming to the end of his career in 2003, said, I think we're about 3 years behind.
Ooh.
Because... They'd been, so the team that won the 2003 World Cup, the vast majority or significant chunk and certainly the leadership had all been there in 99. So they'd all done it kind of once before. They'd done multiple Six Nations as a team. They'd won Heineken Cups. They'd won leagues. And they'd been together as a unit for such a long period of time. Now this Exeter team, to link it back to where we were, they're on that journey. Mm. And they're a very good team. And Premiership level, they're right up there. But when you step up and you start competing with the likes of Munster, the likes of Leinster, the likes of Saracens at the higher level, they are still a number of years off.
Yeah, I think they're about... I mean, it could happen any time, really. Last year, they were up against Leinster in the group stages. That's not easy for anyone. This year, it's been a magical year for Gloucester. And actually, they probably have stepped back a tiny bit from where they were last year, particularly the group stages.
If they'd have won at home, if they'd won at Sandy Park against Gloucester...
It's all over, isn't it?
It's a completely different story.
Done and dusted. And it's Matt, you mentioned Leinster there. The fact that Tyburn was a Leinster Academy product, Joey Carberry has come from Leinster. He's now 20 out of 20 for kicks.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And that is following a game, I can't remember which one we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, but he had a really bad game. It might have been the cast game earlier in the year, just before Christmas, where he missed a couple of, not easy kicks, but missed a couple of kicks to lose the game. But since then, he's been phenomenal, unstoppable.
So there's one thing that I saw a lot in the Munster-Exeter game that you see a lot generally speaking now. It's not exclusive to that game. It's all over the place. But I think that this needs to be clamped down on. Not stopping it from happening, but... So let me start. What I'm talking about is the lengthening of the ruck.
Okay.
Were you reaching for a button thinking I was going to say Twitter or something?
Yes.
Nothing on Twitter. It's on the rugby field. Although Twitter is a toxic cesspit. Right, so... Yeah, the lengthening of the ruck. So the ruck is one, the ball's at the back, and then about one or two extra players come and lengthen the ruck, and then the scrum half just gradually rolls the ball back with their feet from where the ball was at the back of the ruck, ready to go, all the way to the back of two more players. I don't have a problem with it per se. I think it's fine. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen, but I want the referees to, once the ball is there at the back and available. To say use it.
Use?
And then if you then start bringing in a player... There is a law, but they're not enforcing it.
Yeah. It's 5 seconds.
And this is, it's 5 seconds, exactly.
From when they say use. From when they say use it. Then the referee has
to... It should be 3 seconds. One, two, three. That's enough.
Yeah, but the point is, if they say, if when Nick White or Conor Murray were getting the ball was available, said use it, they would have been pinged free kick...
Scrum, isn't it?
Every single time when they put, oh, come in, stand in there and let me roll it back a bit. Come in, stand in there, let me roll it back. It's taking ages.
This feels like we're going round this exact same loop. Because before the law got changed to the use it law, there was some ridiculous caterpillaring. Like, six players deep and it would take 15, 20... I remember there was a couple of games...
Wales seemed to...
England did it. When was it? It was changed about 5 or 6 years ago. England, there was a Six Nations where it was just making games unwatchable because teams were taking 20 seconds, 30 seconds to settle this elaborate snake of half a dozen forwards.
I think there is a sort of sweet spot here because I like the idea that you can either have a short ruck or a long ruck.
Have a ruck as long as you want, but just you can't take as long as it's taken.
Just be quick about it.
I mean, like the technicality in it because what you're going to see soon, I believe, is rucks shortening. Because it's quicker for the scrum half to get the ball to whiz it away. And then rucks lengthening for box kicks and then caterpillaring. And I actually think I quite like the art of the ruck and forming the ruck and all the different options that it gives you. I do, on the other hand, though, appreciate that if you've got six forwards deep, you know, and it's...
Taking 10 seconds, yeah, 15 it's a bit, seconds.
If you added up the amount of extra time in that Munster-Exeter game, which was ball was available and ready to go and to when the ball was actually used, you'd probably have 5 or 6 minutes of that match.
Yeah.
Because there was so many box kicks. I just noticed it particularly in that game because it was relentless box kicking.
Mm. Yeah, like I say, I think there's a sweet spot somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I just like the idea that you can mould your forward packs to do different things. It's kind of like a miniature set piece within the game. So, I quite like it.
So Munster go to Edinburgh. And Exeter have to go back
Munster
and rethink.
Munster go to Edinburgh. Wow.
That will be interesting.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah.
Wow.
So these matches happening the weekend
April?
Of... It's March, end of March.
Is it end of March?
So it's, God, so... Is it like Brexit weekend?
Is it?
It might be.
You do a special podcast for that one? Or does the internet shut down? I can't remember. Something
happens.
Yeah.
No, it's like Y2K. It's like the whole... You know, when... you know, cash machines weren't going to work. And,
thankfully, we all live quite close to each other, so we don't need to fly to studio.
But we're not going to have electricity anymore, so we'll give out JB's address, and anyone that can get to the podcast, we'll do it.
Better still, if you want to hear the podcast after Brexit, let us know in advance, and we'll send you a vinyl.
There'll be no postal service, JB.
Oh, God, no, there won't. Will
carrier pigeon. Your old man loves carrier pigeons.
Yes, he does.
Perfect. We kind of 28th...
Look, he's laughing now, old man.
28th to the 31st of March. Yes. It is. God, so that's only 2 weeks after the Six Nations.
Yeah,
that's right. So it's one round of Premiership and then...
Oh, that's so brutal. So brutal. Especially for the likes of Leinster and Saracens, who kind of half their teams will be playing in the Six Nations.
Yep, it's going to be a tough old slog.
And in fact, Edinburgh and Glasgow as well.
Let's talk about your boys, Phil.
Oh, so proud.
Suffed them.
I was so...
I was certain that you were losing this.
I was absolutely... Before the game, I had a little bit of hope. At halftime, I was absolutely certain this would just be a repeat of last year. In fact, until halftime, it was an almost carbon copy of us throwing it away against Wasps.
Until 55, 57 minutes, it was 13-0 to Leicester.
So infuriating. Because they just, other than McCloskey powering through the middle a couple of times, powering in between Ford and Tamua, they just couldn't get anything right in that first half. I don't know, Tim, you were obviously there. You had a pitch side view.
Yeah.
What was your kind of your perception of what went wrong from
that? I thought it was history repeating and that they'd blown it mentally.
Yeah.
I thought they just lost the plot.
And I thought fair play to Leicester.
Oh, yeah.
Because Leicester, they could have easily turned up and rolled over. But they put in a real performance. They played very, very well. I thought Ford and Tamua were good. They made a couple of tackles on McCloskey, but other than that, they controlled the game well. I thought a number of the forwards stepped up as well.
I thought George Ford was excellent.
Yeah. George Ford is excellent.
In attack and in defence, he is like a little terrier. That guy really cares.
He does.
He seems to be earning his money this season, let's put it that way.
Well, one thing, just on George Ford, before we go back to Ulster, there's a lot of people online, and I didn't spot it on the day.
Oh, hold on.
But I've spotted that...
Where did you find these comments?
No, on his hand. He had something written on his hand.
Ooh.
Can you...
So look.
That's George Ford's hand, apparently. It says...
Get up and go again.
No.
F-U,
and then...
Something, something.
Something K, it, and then B.Y.
Ben Youngs.
Does the B.Y mean Ben Youngs? And what is that message? F it, B-Y.
F it, B-Y.
What is that? Because you see people with stuff on their tape around their wrist.
Yeah.
Is there any...
Do you think Ben Youngs wrote that on his hand? I don't know.
So if I saw it on a forward and there was no repeating letters, it's relatively short, I would assume it'd be some sort of line out.
Yeah.
But not for... Maybe it is.
Don't know. Yeah. So I have known players and coaches to write on each other's and other people's chests, arms...
Really?
...bodies pre-game. Yeah. Used to have a former rugby league, former St. Helens player... and Northampton player as a coach, Andy Northey, and his nickname was Axe, and he used to write Axe across your collarbone on your shoulders with a massive X, and he's like, that's where the X is, where the power's coming from for the big hit.
Wow. So
players used to go into games with Axe written on their shoulders.
Wow. I'm sure he's a lovely bloke, but if you just said that without names or context, I'd say that guy's a egomaniac. write his own name on people.
He would also say, like, who do you want to be like? And then write whoever. Finger to him.
Have you ever written anything on your wrist, on little tape on your wrist?
Not
Jay?
On tape. I know I've written something on my hand. I'm just trying to remember what the hell it is. I did it in Broughton Park.
LTBP?
Get milk, like... bread, washing up liquid, bin bags.
No, it was something. I can't remember what on earth it was. I remember in uni writing the... Because we played, like, freshers, like, the UE Kings, which, like, the social team played the freshers, and we wrote the name of our opposite number somewhere, but I can't remember where. maybe a shoulder or arm. I've never done something.
Well, yeah, let us know if there's any interesting things been written on that you write down or that your teammates write down on their wrist. Because George Ford, that's the most creative and unexpected that I've seen. At Rugby Podcast, we are on Twitter. Back to this game then.
Yeah.
Henderson back 7 weeks early.
I know.
7 weeks?
With a thumb.
Yeah.
Because there's talk, two bits of thumb-related injury news this week. We'll come on to the second one later, of course. But Hendo, man of the match performance after coming back 7 weeks early.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
He doesn't look like he should be as good as he is. When you stand and look at him.
I mean, he's
if you had a lineup,
boy,
if you had a lineup of guys, you wouldn't pick him out as the international superstar.
No. You wouldn't. He doesn't look like he's going to be anywhere near as strong as he is. Because he is an absolute mountain.
Yeah.
Physically, in terms of his strength. But he's got kind of relatively normal looking arms. Not like Kurt Seer.
There's hope for us yet.
Absolutely. So this game, so I watched, as a family do, so I managed to watch the first half of it live
on your phone,
on BT Sport, but on my phone, unfortunately.
And thinking, what's the point in watching the second half?
Unfortunately. I was thinking, what's the point in watching the second half? So I got in my car and drove back listening to the game on BBC Radio 5 Live via BBC Leicester or Leicestershire. I don't know which one it is. But there was...
Oh, man, the one-eyed commentaries you get on BBC Local is hilarious. So
well, it was. Yeah.
I was listening to... I didn't mean to cut across you, but I'll just while it's fresh in my mind. I had to stop and watch Munster v Exeter. I watched the second half, sat in my car. I was driving back from Leicester. But for the first half, I listened to BBC Devon. And it's hilarious. They've got one guy that's a pretty regular commentator, and they've got one old fella, like proper Devon bloke. Go on, Chiefs. And basically, the two of them were just talking, not to each other or with each other, just the commentator was doing the commentating, and the old bloke was just talking over the top of him. Like, go on, X. Oh, you don't want to do that, mate. Oh, come on. I was like, so, he wasn't explaining what was going on. He was just shouting like a fan.
So your Devon accent is far better than mine, but I was listening to it. I can't remember when it was. It was a couple of months ago. Tim, say, in a Devon accent, say Santiago Cordero.
Santiago Cordero.
I was cracking up every time.
That's excellent.
Anyway,
you were listening to the game.
Back to this game. So there was a few things. There was one...
Oh, sorry, Tim. What did George Ford have on his hand again?
F it. Unedited, and then BY. But there was a dot between the B and the Y, like its initials, BY. So that must be Ben Young's.
Hmm.
Cool. Okay, sorry. I'm literally trying to find out now.
Yeah.
I'm texting everyone that I know.
Yeah,
so Carl Ferns doesn't know, so...
Carl Ferns doesn't know. surprise.
Right.
There was a couple of bits of interesting commentary. The one-eyed thing is exactly right, Tim. There was one point. Where Balakoon went through for the try, the commentator said, and one of the Ulster players has kicked it, I don't know which one, and Balakoon picks the ball up and scores. One of the Ulster players, it was Billy Burns, the started fly half, former Gloucester player, happens to kick the ball.
Yeah.
There was that. They described, with 10 minutes to go, they described this as the highest, an amazing exhibition of the highest draw, top quality rugby, and then immediately remembered, oh, apart from the first half, which was awful. Yeah. And the one other bit was, they seemed insistent that, because when this game finished, they didn't seem to really know who was going to be playing who, what it meant for consequences, but they were talking about Ulster's chances going through in the semi-final, and weighing up whether Ulster go to Saracens, Racing, or Leinster. And it was the pundit's opinion that they would prefer to go to Leinster rather than the other two. Now, none of those are easy games, but I'd actually give the least chance of winning at Leinster.
Yeah.
That is the place I would least like to go.
I know there is the context there. It's not... They know them well.
Yeah. know them well, having won there once, won in Dublin once in the last 20 years. Yeah. They know them very well. I would almost go as far as to say I would fancy our chances certainly no less playing the All Blacks away. That is, we might as well be going to Wellington to play the All Blacks.
So it's not going to be a 20th anniversary treat for Ulster fans. They're just going to have to enjoy this quarterfinal.
Yes. Enjoy. Yeah. There is a chance. It's going to be so, so difficult.
So Richard Cockerell, English coach at a Scottish side, doing amazing things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dan McFarland, English coach.
Yeah.
But unlike Richard Cockerell, I think Dan McFarland's someone that most, your average English rugby fan doesn't even know.
Yes, no, I mean, I actually thought he was Scottish, so.
Even still now.
Yeah.
Most English fans wouldn't know.
Cool. My favourite bit of that game was when Jacob Stockdale, the Cube, when he...
Crichton.
when Cube did Johnny May and then his smile, just giggling. You could see he was thinking, yeah, bring on the Aviva Stadium. In a few weeks. Yeah,
a couple of weeks' time.
Is it only a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
What? Is it 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Oh, my word.
Is it? I think I'm right in saying that. It's the second...
Yeah, of course it is. It's the second weekend in February. Oh, my word.
Oh, God. You're looking forward to Downfall 2.0?
Downfall 2019.
Yeah, Downfall 19.
Oh, bring it on. It's good.
The refall.
Well, with that, should we segue there into England? We can pick up on the rounding up the quarterfinals in a minute.
Yeah, there's a couple of signings as well we need to talk about. Oh, and also there's the injury thing, isn't there? And do you see the thing in the Times about the players getting bigger?
No,
I've not seen that.
Look, if we run out of things to talk about, I'll tell you all about them.
Red card report though first.
One. Oh yeah.
We want your help with this because Red Card Report it shouldn't just be the top flight that get to have their red cards debated. So we want your grassroots red cards.
Yes, quite. So I think I'll kick this off with a red card from Old Bristolians, where Bristolians captain said, "Hi, sir, please can you watch out for fists to the face?" Seconds later, the opposition headbutted an Old Bristolian with the worst headbutt he's ever seen, and he was then sent off. Red card! Phil?
One coming from James Pate, or possibly James Pate, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how his name's pronounced.
Married to Jane Knapes?
he was referencing Burnley, a Burnley player.
Oh, played against them.
Playing against Clitheroe.
Played against them.
Oh, derby match.
In a Northwest derby, who was red carded for... Now, I'm not sure if this is the third headbutt of a game or third headbutt that this player has done.
Like a Mortal Kombat combo.
That's good move. That's good neck endurance to do three repeated headbutts.
You've really got to respect someone who really puts something into their art.
Yeah, their trade. Their craft.
The craft, that's
maybe,
it.
Well, maybe they should go for one really good headbutt rather than three... average headbutts. But anyway, carry on, Phil. Sorry.
I think that's it, to be honest.
I think red card.
Red card.
And I saw one in mini rugby today.
A red card in mini rugby?
Well, I mean, they made the player go off and he could be replaced with a player. But yes, yeah, that was the end of his day. And it was Old Bedians versus versus Broughton Park.
Carry on, go.
And I won't give names of players or teams or who was who, but... because it's not fair on them. But basically...
Well, go on, who?
One player was streaking towards the line and made a great break and was going for a try. There was no way anyone was going to tackle them. And so a sliding football tackle gave the guy running in to score a try a face full of dirt about an inch before the try line.
I kind of always feel... I've seen it actually at university rugby as well.
Have you?
Yeah, the sliding tackle. If you can get into a position where you can do a feet-first sliding tackle... you can do another tackle. You might get carried over the line in if you're 5 yards out, but just it's not worth getting sent off and conceding a try rather than just conceding a try.
Yeah. I feel this has to be a wind-up because I have here that there is a guy by the nickname of Acorn who plays for Sevenoaks. That can't be... this can't be a true story.
Nickname, of course.
Is this someone doing like a... Hugh Janus... has got in touch to say
IP freely says Yes. So, yeah, apparently that was ruck justice. And on referees' damage inspection, it was upgraded from a yellow to a red card. So, you know, good stuff there.
So file your red card report after your Saturday game for the next podcast at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. And we will we'll debate and shake our fists at the red cards.
Because we are disgusted by red cards.
Oh, we are disgusted. By red. Absolutely.
Awful.
This is not in any way a gratuitous enjoyment of...
It's not.
...of some ruck justice.
Awful. Now, just last one. Not a red card, and we don't need any music for it. This is also from our good friends in Bristolians. I have been informed that in a second team game, which their second team was winning comfortably, the last kick of the game was a conversion for the opposition who scored a try, and the referee took it. He then missed it, and then still awarded the team the 2 points.
Love it.
Amazing. So that is amazing refereeing.
That is.
If only Wayne Barnes would do that.
That would be quite something, wouldn't it?
When Wayne Barnes has his last game, he has to do that.
Take the final conversion. Yeah, that would be brilliant.
Or
Nigel Owens. Nigel Owens, yeah.
When it's like a prop forward.
His last gag.
His last ever game.
Nigel Owens' last gag.
The last gag. that's also the title of his upcoming book, I think.
Right, England squad.
Oh, here we
England
go.
Squad.
England squad and also Eddie Jones's...
and Wales squad.
Loose lips.
Eddie Jones's loose lips.
Well, he's been saying some interesting things in the press.
Oh, yeah. We should call them headlines.
Ooh.
Because they have begun. The Eddie Jones headlines have all begun.
Do you know what I was... No, go on, carry on, and I'll talk about it later.
No, that's all right. So what he has said, and a lot of people in the Emerald Isle have thought this is arrogant and... ridiculous and stupid.
Well, it is ridiculous.
Eddie Jones has said that basically Johnny Sexton gets preferential treatment from referees. I'm just going to come to Eddie Jones' defence, because if you read the whole quote...
Yes, I'm with you on this.
If you read the whole quote, you tell me what is controversial, wrong, or unsportsmanlike or uncouth about this. The quote, Sexton has the bat phone to the referee. When he talks, the referee listens. Right, that's the sentence that's been taken out and used in isolation.
The
next sentence, that's because of his status in the game. You earn that, like Richie McCaw did.
Yeah, I think it's completely right.
It's actually, the headlines are kind of calling it as controversial. It's actually a massive compliment to Johnny Sexton.
So this is the difference, I guess, between people who write this stuff for a living and actual, you know, some actual rugby fans, which is I would have finished that sentence for him, which was, yes, he does have the bat phone to the ref because he is one of the most respected players of a generation, if not the generation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that stacks up. No problems here. Move on. But it's kind of like...
But, yeah, that Eddie Jones being nice about someone.
That's not going to sell Irish newspapers.
Or English ones.
Or English newspapers, or get clicks on websites.
The English newspapers have been just as bad with this English team, because most of them were talking about a positional change for Jack Knoll. It doesn't exist. He never implied that.
Yeah, you're right. So Jack Knoll's in the England squad, and obviously Eddie Jones was asked about it, and Eddie Jones made a comment suggesting that Jack Knoll could be used as like an auxiliary forward in terms of the game plan, and that got taken very lazily to... Jack Knoll.
Incredibly lazy.
Jack Knoll to be an open side, which was only made more entertaining because it's something that Austin Healey said could happen three years ago.
Yeah. It's... I mean, some papers made a whole... Like, literally a whole page story out of this, and it's nothing. It's nothing different to what Shane Williams does. It's nothing different to what Colby does. You know, fast wingers, round breakdowns with quick feet, that's what they do. And they're just talking about moving a winger to the breakdown. Anyone who knows anything about rugby would say we see that fairly frequently.
And Jack Knoll himself, 2 years ago in the Lions.
We've got a scoop!
Described himself. This is actually a bigger scoop. He described himself as the pick-and-go king. Yeah. He said, back in Exeter, they call me the pick-and-go king, which was closely followed up by all of the Exeter players on Instagram going, nope, no, we don't. You're just saying that to yourself,
Is that like Paul Ince giving himself the nickname the governor, as he did back in the day?
Yep.
Yeah.
Call me the governor.
So there's two parts of this England squad. Okay, so number one, it's probably the most settled England squad, or one of Eddie's stronger ones. That's for sure.
Well, he said it's the strongest England squad he's named.
I tend to agree with him on that, and I think all the media nonsense. Do you think he's doing a little bit of a Jose Mourinho, like taking attention away from his actual squad? Not that he needs to; it's a good squad. But we're all talking about stupid stuff, and actually, no one's really talking about the squad itself.
Maybe that's a good point. I don't think
there's a lot to say about the squad itself.
I think there is. I mean, it's not interesting, but there's lots to say about it.
I do think, just on the Eddie Jones saying it, I think there is an element where, especially on the Sexton thing, he is trying to plant a little seed to referees,
to
have that little bit of doubt, which is a bit of gamesmanship. Everyone does
it. And actually, if we can talk about a fly half that does get preferential treatment, there's not many fly halves that fly around with their shoulders into opposition and don't get yellow carded or penalties.
Owen Farrell has had this long-standing thumb injury. He simply cannot wrap his arms.
No,
it's a medical condition that prevents him from wrapping his arms, Jay. I'm not having this any longer. Yeah.
It's on par with that spin bowler from Sri Lanka. It's a medical condition, and therefore you don't need to bowl properly.
Exactly.
Whatever his name was.
Malinga.
It isn't a cricket pod.
The spinner, because there's the fast bowler
who
bowls it with his arm out sideways.
Yeah,
but no, Muralitharan had slightly bent arm.
Yeah, that's basically why
leg spinner.
So that's why Owen Farrell can't tackle probably because of a leg spinner or a fast bowler. Yeah. One of the two.
Or medical condition.
So the headlines from this England squad. Chris Robshaw and Dylan Hartley will return to the England squad when fit. Dylan Hartley probably for the third game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a potential leadership vacuum.
Yep, there is.
Potentially is one potential storyline. Another one, there's a couple of names on there I didn't expect to see. I was delighted to see Ollie Thorley.
Yes, agreed.
As we talked about last week.
Wonderful selection.
I was surprised to see Ollie Devoto, but again, I'm quite happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Although if you count Farrell as an option as a centre, then that means six centres in a squad, which I think just at a time when we have identified England haven't got a settled centre pairing. I'm not sure having six bodies.
Is that counting Farrell and Daly? So you've got Tio, Devoto, Slade, Tuolagi, then Daly and Farrell.
Farrell and Daly, yes.
But I kind of look at those two as a full-back winger or a 10.
Yes, you're right.
You
are right.
So here's a few things about this England team. Number one, leadership vacuum, which you've absolutely nailed, Tim. Owen Farrell cannot be the captain of this team.
He is named as captain.
He's going to have to be, he's going to have to get better at it.
Right, so he needs to get better. That, for me, tells me that the most important player in this England setup is going to be Ben Tail, because Ben Tail is going to have to be that rock which Owen Farrell relies on, so we don't have the incidents that we otherwise would have.
Tao, who started for 12 against Worcester in their narrow win against Stad. He started alongside Ollie Lawrence.
Did he? Good. Mm. Good.
Good little combo of that.
So, yeah, that's going to be quite important. The other thing which I think is really interesting about his squad is I think one of the reasons he thinks it's his strongest squad is because he's got a core of players that he now can trust. And he pushes players incredibly hard. And I think he now has at least a group of players that he knows he can take to a certain limit. And I think that's why the turnover in the England squad is quite intense, because I don't think everyone can live with what Eddie Jones wants and expects. And now I think he's got a core of lads who know what to expect from him and can deal with it.
So there was Nathan Earl out, Ollie Thorley in, fine. We called that one last week. There was Ollie Devoto in, Alex Lazowski out.
Mm.
Okay, but Alex Zanzowski has not been starting for Saracens.
Yep. Even when Brad Barrett's been injured, he has it a little bit, but not always.
Well, I mean, what about this weekend?
I was very surprised that Lazowski didn't just slot in at 10.
I mean, it could be like a compliment to how good he is at 13, but he doesn't seem... Or was he 12? Tompkins 13.
Tompkins has been playing 13. Tompkins has had a good run at 13 and looking good as well.
And Daly's, Daly's coming in.
Tompkins plays 13.
And you think Daly's coming in next year to be a 13?
Yeah. Now, Daly's an interesting one. I mean, you saw the Wasps game today. Do you think Daly played his best game?
No.
He wasn't given any opportunity.
No, I would agree with that. Play. Wasps generally were better.
So let me ask a different question.
I've said, me and Phil have been pretty consistent with what we're saying. I I'm not convinced. Not to say he can't or shouldn't, but he hasn't played much.
All right.
And isn't convincing me as a 15.
Let me try a different question then. Do you think he's given his all for the last couple of weeks in a Wasps jersey?
So I think he will.
I'm sure he has.
Yeah. Knowing how competitive, knowing how much this kind of stuff means, I think yes. I think so. They asked the question today in comms: where would you prefer to see, or rather, where would you, as an Irish player supporter, where would you not like to see Elliot Daly? And debating whether it's wing, fullback, 13. And for me, it doesn't really matter. I'd prefer not to see him at 15 because I think he's a bit of a risk positioning under the high ball. But as long as you get the ball to him in space, as long as you can manufacture positions when he's in any one of those positions where he gets one-on-one with the player, bit of the opportunity to come onto a ball at pace, it simply doesn't matter.
Okay.
The problem has been that Wasps have not been manufacturing those positions, not due to Elliot Daly's fault, but because Wasps haven't been playing well.
So my answer to that, where would if I was Irish, where would I least like to see him playing? I'd least like to see him playing in Saracens, having a good time and contributing fully. I don't think he has contributed fully to Wasps for the last 3 or 4 weeks, actually. This really worries me because it's a World Cup year. And like you said, Tim, you would have thought that, maybe that's how he deals with the pressure. He gets a little bit more narky, a little bit more complainy. But it is a worry for me. I think he's starting to lose some form in a really critical time where you want your England players really coming to the boil nicely.
Be interesting to see how Eddie Jones, what the side he actually does select in Dublin. So in the forwards, I was surprised to see Ben Earl's name there. And yes. who was the other?
Very good, though.
Clifford, I think.
Jack Clifford and Ben Earl and Zach Mercer, surplus to requirements on this occasion.
Jack Clifford is off to
Exeter.
Yep. Looks like it. Turned on Leicester to go there.
Well, so the way I read this, because if I was Zach Mercer, I might be scratching my head going, hey, I was in a minute ago.
And this
you were picking me. No, but before... Yeah. So what I think, actually, Eddie Jones is looking and going, I know which back row players I'm taking to the World Cup, but potentially...
Who's that next guy?
Potentially what I might need is someone who can cover across the whole back row
as
a reserve if I need an extra body because someone goes down. And that's why he's going, I'm going to look at Ben Earl and I'm going to look at Jack Clifford over Zach Mercer because they are 6-7-8.
Although Mercer can play 6-7-8... I think you've got
Simmons.
He's not a seven option, though, is he? And with Underhill injured, I think he's got a question mark. If I take Underhill and he goes down injured, I don't have a backup seven. But he's got Rob Shaw in the squad as well. So anyway,
Rob Shaw's not fit. Seven.
Well, Tom Curry. No, right
Tom
now
Curry would
be the
starting
seven.
Right,
and then Mark Wilson.
So, do you know who I'd take to back up Tom Curry?
That's exactly what I was thinking. But anyway,
yeah.
So it's interesting.
Too similar. Yeah. Just enough options now.
So I'm not sure what he's up to, but
I think he does like to bring people in, have a good look at him, kind of as you were touching on before, Jay. See if they can meet his incredibly high demands for work rate.
Yeah,
and some can and some can't. Some have fallen by the wayside completely. Some have been in and out. And I think an element, whether this will work or not is another question, but an element is he likes to keep people on his toes, like dropping Mike Brown, which has coincided with Mike Brown's form picking up for Quinns.
And I think Mike Brown is exactly that sort of character, actually. I think Farrell is that sort of character.
Farrell's not going to get dropped. But
if he did,
he would work even harder to get back in.
I think Dan Cole has shown himself to be more than worthy of a recall with those conditions.
And has been
playing his best rugby for a long time recently. So
someone like Dan Cole, for me, falls into like the Wigglesworth category.
Mm.
Like, we don't need any more high-level game today for those two. We know exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are. We know they will give absolutely everything if they get the opportunity to wear that shirt. It's fair enough to kind of try other people in those positions.
The one position where Eddie Jones has always completely made me scratch my head and go, I just do not understand what you're playing at. Well, there's several positions, but the main one being scrum half. Because on one tour, he takes Jack Maunder and then never in an England squad ever again. He'll pick Dan Robson in a squad, then he'll drop him out, never to be seen again. And now he's back in.
Ben Spencer's been in
and then gone. It's odd. And continuity, I'm not against continuity or bringing people in, but it's the fact that it's not like, Danny Kerr, Dan Robson's now, I fancy him a bit more than you. I'm going to I'm going to pick him ahead of you. It's just players come from being from the abyss to back in the squad. It's odd. I don't think Eddie Jones knows what his pecking order is, but I'm glad to see Dan Robson there. He's earned that.
Yeah.
Although, he's only just back from injury, so.
Yeah. And they had Velikot around the squad, didn't they? Were they talking about bringing in Velikot?
He was at the same
and
time.
And Willie Hines has been in the squad.
Yes.
As opposition.
Willie Hines was, he was only in there when there was kind of a complete lack of other options due to Premiership finals.
What praise.
Willie Hines is a very good player. Yeah.
Now, Tim, you're a man on the inside. How serious is Owen Farrell's wrist?
Thumb?
Is it thumb? I thought it was wrist.
Thumb.
It's
semi-serious?
Well, no, I think he's expected to be available in Dublin.
If only he had wrists and thumbs made of gold, like certain other fly halves.
Well, so that is interesting. So there is only two fly halves in the squad. I just wonder, because it was late on Friday that the announcement was, well, it was Saturday, but they said it was late on Friday it was discovered the Owen Farrell thumb injury that needs minor surgery but doesn't prevent him from playing in the Six Nations.
That makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, Horwell ripped off his entire arm and was pretty much back within
just
5 days.
Stitch it back on.
Yeah, well, it was a finger. But, you know, still. So, maybe they're right.
Yeah, and Hendo got back after 3 weeks rather than 10 weeks.
Yeah. Now, if he is out, do you go straight to George Ford? And who is the backup that you bring in?
Absolutely George Ford. But I just wonder if Monday, Tuesday, we might see a Cipriani-shaped call-up.
I hope so. I really, really hope so. It'd also make England just look like, I mean, if you're picking a team to play England and you don't know if you're going to see Farrell or Cipriani, that's a real worry.
Well, no, because you know, that's not even the debate. You're going, are we going to see Farrell or Ford?
Well, yeah, I don't know that, right? And the reason I don't know that is because you've got a fitness race for Farrell. And if they make the right noises, I would be making the right noises. He's going to play. But in the background, you know he's not. So really, if you're a game planner, if you're Andy Farrell, you've gone, oh, okay, do I have Ford? Do I have Farrell? Do I have Cipriani? And I would make them think that Cipriani and Ford are basically vying for the same position. Sorry, am I
nudging your mic. That's fine.
What
fine.
A fool.
As you take your socks off seductively.
That's right.
What a treat we're in. It's a pity we're not on YouTube or Facebook this week.
Exactly.
Can you not hear that as you're doing it?
Sorry.
Can you hear it?
Sorry. No, I can't.
You have headphones on.
Yeah, I know. I've got terrible hearing.
And with this incredible new kit.
It is incredible.
All of your scratching and shuffling is crystal clear.
Thank you for mentioning it. I think the sound gate is on, so I'm not making enough noise for it to register. Yeah, so fly halves?
Yeah.
Fine with it?
Fine.
Not worried?
No, I'm fine with the whole squad.
I think it's a good squad.
I like the squad overall.
It's still the things that they need to bed in whatever sense of partnership he thinks he's going to have in the World Cup. And on that front, Jonathan Joseph made his comeback this week from injury.
Good. Good to see.
They need to sort out the exactly... If it's going to be Elliot Daly, fullback, fine. Just, there you go, you've got 5 games.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't look at Elliot Daly there at all now. I think I've seen enough of it.
So one big step up from the autumn is just the carrying options in the forward.
Yeah.
So last time, Mako was out, Billy was out, Nathan was out. We were debating whether Zach Mercer or Ben Morgan were going to start at number 8, but actually it was Mark Wilson who massively stepped up as an international number 8. Which I thought would have been kind of a bridge too far, step too far, but he was sensational. Now, he, with Billy and Nathan there, he will go on to probably if Brad Shields, who dropped out of the game against Leinster today, and if...
Is Brad Shields even in the squad?
Yeah.
How?
And if
how?
Bob Shaw, Brad Shields is a great player.
He's not a great player.
You've just not seen enough of him.
No, he's not a great player. He is a head-scratchingly poor player, and I do not know...
The most amazing thing is he's so...
Newsflash! Everyone
so
stop talking! Everyone stop talking!
Hold on! Wait for it!
Effort. BY stands for Effort. Back yourself.
back yourself.
Yeah.
So, not Ben Youngs.
Not Ben Youngs. No. So, yeah, it looks like Will Greenwood wrote on George Ford's hand, which is nice, isn't it? It's good of him.
Nice.
Yep.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sorry, what were we saying before I got interrupted then?
You were on one of your rants about Brad Shields again.
Yeah, a head-scratchingly poor player who should not be in the England team.
The player that he most reminds me of
Rob Shaw.
No, Haskell.
Haskell. No, no, he does not.
Yeah.
Haskell is a league apart. I mean, he really is. He's bigger, he works harder.
How many Super Rugby titles has Haskell won?
We're not playing Super Rugby.
Haskell has.
Yeah, but we're not playing Super Rugby here. So, no. Look, head-scratchingly poor players, probably not fair, but he shouldn't be in the...
Jake, what are you doing? Stop banging. Whatever it is you're doing, there's banging. The pod.
Yeah. You hear something.
When you move, it just...
Do you think you're the problem? Anyway. Right, okay.
Are you trying to gaslamp JB?
Gaslight,
sorry.
What does gaslighting mean?
We're not going into it.
Is it from...
We're not doing it, Tim.
Oh, it happens on Twitter, does it? It's one of these phrases I've heard a lot recently. I go, what does that mean? Does the etymology of it come from going round in the evening when someone would... The gaslighter would go and light the gaslights.
It's a play,
the street lights.
It's a play, isn't it?
I've got no idea. Look, it happens in The Guardian and we don't need to talk about it. Okay, so Mark Wilson going to eight. I've got some thoughts on this as well. So this is my thought on how you replace an eight. And I've kind of thought about it because Bath do it as well, and so do Australia, which is you move a seven to there. And my thinking is if your eight does go down, I think actually a seven's a pretty good option. Because although you don't have the big ball carrying, what you do get from someone who can naturally play seven is a ton of volume, a ton of work rate. So, you know, if he does go down, I think England or if Billy isn't available, I think Mark Wilson's a fine replacement.
He certainly is after his performances in the autumn. He was phenomenal.
Mm. Gaslighting. A manipulation tactic used to gain power. So basically, for example, in the movie Gaslight, 1944, a man manipulates his wife to the point where she thinks she is losing her mind.
Right.
So it's basically sowing doubt in an individual's own perception and sanity. How does that relate to like political issues and social justice that the Guardian keeps telling me is gaslighting?
For the purpose of this podcast, it doesn't. Although if you read...
How was Diane Abbott being gaslit on Question Time?
No.
That's what I want to know.
I will say this, if you carry on reading that sentence, though, it does have a whole whole paragraph in that section there about Johnny Sexton and Richie McCaw gaslighting refs.
Other squads.
So Wales announced their squad.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
Anyone you would have changed in there? Because they've got some options.
That boy Wainwright, what a rise he's had.
Well, I just...
Wainers.
I just think with the Welsh squad... although the Welsh clubs have been, sorry, what are they, Prince, regions or whatever they want to be called now. Although they've done awfully in Europe this year, there's no way to get around this. The Welsh national squad is looking pretty tasty. And it's sort of like the opposite to Eddie Jones, which is Eddie Jones spends his time just discarding players, whereas Gatland just seems to spend his time bringing players
more
in.
More and more options.
And because of that, they look like they're going to be probably second favourites in the tournament,
behind France.
Behind France, yes. Because well, no, Bucky's favourites. Bucky's favourites.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Not yeah. JB's.
Not
choice.
JB's favourites.
No, France will still win the Six Nations.
JB, who said that Lyon would be the surprise package of the Champions
and
Cup.
And they did certainly surprise, didn't they?
The first French side ever to get 0 points.
Well, I never said what they would do. I just said they'd be a surprise package. So they certainly did surprise me. There's no two ways about that.
Fair enough.
Yep, so I'm pretty happy with it, actually.
The island squad looks ominous.
Yep. Settled, dangerous,
with
hungry.
With a sprinkling of kind of like new up-and-coming magic, like Llama, like the Farrell boys from Munster. Even someone like Carberry, who is only really this season. So he's done it at the highest level for Leinster, but only ever as kind of second choice or playing as an auxiliary 15. Whereas this season, he is the real deal at 10.
He's not bad, is he?
He's pretty handy.
Pretty handy. So my question about this Irish setup, and it's not about the Irish team, so apologies. But the backup for Sexton at Leinster at the moment, Byrne, what's his first name?
Ross.
Ross
There's
Byrne,
Ross
right?
And what's the winger?
There's a...
The other Byrne.
Yeah, there's a winger called Byrne as well. Okay, but no. Ross, I think it's Ross Byrne, right?
One of the Byrne boys.
One of the Byrne
The
ones.
One that plays fly half.
Who actually is very good.
Yeah.
I assume he's Irish. He sounds Irish.
Yes.
He's not Australian or something. And he's quite young. I mean, what is the future for him?
Well, so Sexton signed on till 21, isn't he?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what he does there. I suspect that might be a day, because he'll be 35, 36... at that point. Does Carberry come back when Sexton leaves? Does Byrne... Because Byrne will get more and more game time. He's already getting...
A ton of it.
A ton of...
With all the Irish internationals. I'm not saying he's...
Champions Cup game time as well.
I was just distracted. Were you talking about... Just talking about Ross Byrne?
Yes.
Because apparently Ross Byrne's younger brother is like... A ridiculous talent.
Did you spot him in the under-20s?
No, when I was over, I didn't spot him at all. He was put on my radar when I was chatting in Leinster last weekend. I can't remember who I was talking to. I can't remember. Might have been. No, I don't want to name drop. That just sounds lame. So, anyway, I was chatting to someone and they just said it's Ross Byrne's younger brother. He's like. A generational type talent, apparently.
Wow, yeah. That's quite interesting. Mm. Quite interesting to know. So the Ireland team looks, as you'd expect, pretty devastatingly good.
So Ireland probably Bucky's favourites.
Yeah,
definitely Bucky's favourites. Definitely my favourites to win the tournament, especially with Stockers.
Yeah,
Harry Byrne is the name you need to look out for.
Yeah, well done, Tim.
There you go,
Stockers. So Stockers. Is joint top try scorer
with, I know this.
Sorry, for what was this?
In the Champions Cup, but also in the Pro 14.
So, oh, really?
The same person who is joint top try scorer in the Champions Cup is also the top try scorer in the Pro 14.
Oh, I do not know.
So Stockers plus one of your favourite players, someone you think should be starting for Ireland.
Cannonball.
Espedo? Oh, no, that's for Italy.
Cannonball of a player.
You think he should be starting?
Muscular, little round, explosive ball of muscle.
You're confusing me. I have no
Hooker.
Idea.
Hooker.
Instead of the current captain.
Oh, really? Cronin.
Cronin. Cronin. Yeah.
Legend. He's having an amazing season.
He is an amazing player, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Rumbling, controlling those driving mauls.
Do you know, he reminds me, for obvious reasons, of Thomas Walden. Which, like, he's not guaranteed to start, but when he does, he's surprisingly nippy. In fact, he's surprisingly devastating.
He is. He's a very impressive runner.
Yeah.
I think most of his tries have been off the back of driving mauls in the Champions Cup.
But he also scored that fantastic try. A very gassy try against Wasps.
He's all fast twitch, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's a guy who's so big as well.
But he's a great powerlifter.
And he's such an amazing option. I mean, I can't think of another... I can't think of another front rower, maybe in world rugby at the moment, who's as explosive as him. City coming off the bench.
Rory Best.
Rory Best, of course. I mean, maybe Kyle Sinclair.
Sinks.
He's a bit more powerful, isn't he? A bit more.
Dane Coles.
Yeah. Slightly different. I think Dane Coles is more of a, like, an athletic type rather than just a raw explosivity.
Taniela Tupu. Taniela Tupu.
Tongan Thor. Yes, totally. Tongan Thor. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, he's up there. He's up there.
Yeah.
Exeter Chiefs, while we've been podcasting, have about 40 minutes ago tweeted some big news in an hour. I'm assuming that's just going to be Jack Clifford or something like that, is it? Nothing.
Yeah. Why do I think...
It's not going to be like... I don't know.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
No. It's not, and I don't think there'd be signposting that either.
47 minutes ago. Join us in an hour.
Shall we just stay silent then?
For 13 minutes for pure silence.
Yeah.
So, shall we go through some transfers, because we're sort of here?
Yeah, go on, what have we got? Yeah. Stephen Kitsoff, rumoured to be coming to the Premiership to play for Sale Sharks. £500,000 a year on a three-year deal.
Yeah, I mean, Sale are looking at forwards, and only forwards. They're not going to be signing anyone for their back division. That's, you know, I can say that is true, because Steve Diamond told me on the Rugby Dungeon.
He did also say that there's five guys from South Africa coming in November. In August, when we went to Sale's training ground.
In November, yeah. So, I mean, there are people, you know, in the works.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
All I'm saying is, like, yes, you're right. But things can change and goalposts can shift. Yes. But they don't need anyone in the back line.
No, because they're
going to get Rob Dupreer back as a fly half.
Yeah, in surely. Like 18 months' time or something. It's a ridiculously long time before their contracts run out, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so the backs will basically look after themselves with the kids coming through. But Kitsoff is an interesting one because, obviously, he's an amazing player. And the point which I sort of made...
He'd make a World 15 if we were picking one, I think.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's a wise use of money. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, he's so expensive. Now, if he's so expensive and he is... You know, he plays like a £500,000 player, if that's what he is on, great. But the danger is that you can pay someone half of that and they can play something like 80% of a, you know, world-class player. And that's kind of the conundrum that Rugby clubs face now.
Does that extra £200,000 to £300,000, does it get you that much difference?
Exactly right.
But it's interesting because the old Leicester mantra used to be your most expensive, therefore, or your most valuable player is your tight-head prop.
Yep.
Your second most valuable player is your backup tight end, bro.
Exactly right.
Now, Kitsoff is, I'm sure he's a loose head.
He is a loose head.
So, and they've already got one of the best.
Ross Harrison.
Yeah, Ross Harrison is one of the best loose heads in the league.
And the thing which makes Ross Harrison valuable is the fact that he goes
80 minutes
hard
every week.
80 minutes every week, doesn't get injured. Touch wood.
He's had a phenomenal, in fact,
he's on 200 games for Sale.
He might be the most valuable loose head in the league because he is just always available and always plays 80 minutes.
So if his value is based on the fact that he can play every minute of every game, well, bringing someone in actually devalues one of your most valuable players. Do you see what I mean? So I am massively up for world-class players playing in the Premiership, but I just think, you know, kind of at what cost?
That's a good question.
Yeah, and that would be my overriding concern. And yeah, if you want to take this a step further, look at Wasps constantly complaining about the salary cap. Well, you won't be complaining about the salary cap if you sign players who fit inside of it, and you're a bit smarter. Mm. So that's kind of what.
But I'd say to any world class rugby players listening, Manchester is a brilliant city to live in.
It is a wonderful city.
And nowhere near as expensive as London.
And
so
you won't get recognised. You won't
get recognised. You can do what Brian Majati used to do: go to Reg's True Barbecue, get a banquet. Of like, I remember I was seeing Brian Majati in Reg's True Barbecue, right in the middle of town, and he was there on his own. It was the day that he'd obviously gone to meet Steve Diamond and sign on for Sale.
Look, if you're a middling,
he had a 4-person table which was covered in food. I've never seen one man demolish so much. It was a sight to behold.
If you're a middling world class rugby player, in the Southern Hemisphere, currently listening to this podcast, surrounded by women in a hot tub, and you're sick of getting recognised, I can tell you right now that Brian Majority and Faf de Klerk can wander around Manchester and they don't get recognised. So there's no chance of you getting recognised.
But there's plenty of women in hot tubs.
So come on up. Come on up.
The hot tub in your gym's quite nice, isn't it, boys?
It is. It is, yeah. It's good.
Don't know. Never been in.
No, he just works out on Go's machine. So Dave Atwood apparently is leaving Bath. Did we cover that one off last week?
Yeah, touched on that, yeah.
Leicester is interesting. Going out of Leicester, Mike Williams has signed for Bath.
Alongside a few others.
Yeah.
Alongside our mate Boise.
And again, these are signings.
Christian Judge,
and there's another one as well from Wasps. Stewart. Is it Will Stewart?
Will Stewart.
Stewart. So I don't like this either, really. I mean, it feels like they're bringing in, well, both Bath, sorry, I think Bath are bringing in a lot of average bodies and not going to get much game time out of them. Because if you look at how many props they've got, how do they settle on the ones that they like?
Well, they've had their fingers burnt the last couple of years because they've had so many injuries. So that's one of the reasons why they've ended up kind of with a flurry of mid-season signings for the past few years.
Yeah, it does feel almost like they don't want to invest heavily in one guy, because if that guy goes down, they're screwed.
Yeah.
So therefore, they've got lots of guys, and they're just hoping one of these guys is going to be really, really good.
The big signing of the week, though, and I love the impact that Bristol Bears have had on the Premiership social media game. I just noticed then, it didn't feel as weird saying Bristol Bears then.
It's
the first time I've said Bristol Bears and not thought, ugh.
How are you feeling about Gloucester Lions yet?
No, thank you.
But then I'll get used to it.
Yeah, one day.
But
I quite like Bristol Bears.
Yeah, no, but Bristol Bears' social media game is outstanding, and other clubs are starting to up their game, like Wasps doing that. Slightly cheesy, but very funny. I love it. Very cheesy, but I quite enjoyed the cheesiness of it. Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Spoof with Malachi Fakatoa.
And the Dai Young character was very funny.
It was very funny.
That was easily the funniest.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little bit weird. So Fekitor is a bigger name. Tamaga Allen is a much bigger bloke, much bigger player. The black prop that they signed in the same week. Hurricanes lad.
He's a massive man.
He is a big, big unit, big tighted prop.
Yeah, I worry for Wasps. I just think, yeah, for everyone that goes out, it feels like they're just trying to plug holes now.
The issue I have with it is the one thing I don't like, as much as I'm going, Malachi Fakatoa, brilliant. That'll be great to see him in the Premiership. And Tamuga Allen, that'll be really good, just seeing a giant man that big. But it's not helping the England side. And there's a lot of money being spent. Stephen Kitsoff. There's a lot that salary cap. Absolutely. And bearing in mind, these are clubs which are not turning a profit and having to go to private investment. There's a lot of money being spent on people that are going to have no benefit whatsoever to the England team.
And the bit... So to kind of link both of those points you just made, the way that Wasps have done it in the last few years, I'll reference kind of three players, which is a very good example, who've all come one after the other, which is Piatow, Beal, Willy LaRue. Mm-hmm. And now kind of Fekitoa is a slightly different player, but feels like he's plugging that big name, big money gap. And all of them have done 1 to 2 years, been very good, but a short-term solution, and prevented someone like Rob Miller, who's a very talented player, from getting more game time. So there is a big trade-off here.
There is a slight context there in the sense that Wasps have had a transitional period with their geography, and that's going to have an impact on their academy system. But actually, being brutally honest, Wasps' academy has not functioned in the way that it needs to make them a profitable... force in the way that Saracens have done.
Yes, I mean Saracens have
made their own players very, very much in the Leinster mould.
And I tell you, another club who are really coming to the fore in this regard is Northampton. I mean, that is one of the smaller regions to be recruiting from,
and they're swimming in a very well populated pool with Leicester, now Wasps, Worcester,
and they are managing to find kids left, right, and centre. And, you know, it makes a huge, huge difference.
And that will only get better the longer that Chris Boyd is involved.
Mm. Now, can I just take this conversation slightly... I'll just talk about Leicester as well, because there are a few bits and pieces going on.
Meeting tomorrow morning.
Meeting tomorrow morning.
Big announcement.
Yeah, so apparently they are looking to promote Tommy... Raphael? Is he a seven?
Yeah.
And then it looks like there's going to be quite a few people being let go. Also, Jesse Creel, who they were targeting, sounds like he's off to Japan, because the money he's been offered is outrageous. So no Jesse Creel.
And you don't have to play. Do a couple of days work in Mitsubishi factory.
Or fixing photocopiers.
Yeah, exactly. Sorted.
Mm. Yes, quite. Jaco Tauta, or whatever his name.
Jaco Tauta.
Tauta, or whatever his name is. In Brendan O'Connor, being offered a new deal. Apparently Mike Fitzgerald is out, as well as...
Mike Williams.
And Valentino, what's his name?
Mapalangi.
Which is a shame because I really liked him. I thought he was really good.
Mapalangi.
Off to France. Oh, sorry. In fact, there's loads. There are loads more names, but you don't really want to hear them, do you?
And Nathan Hughes, it was confirmed. Nathan Hughes to Wasps. Well, I think we probably first mentioned that a couple of months ago.
Mm.
Sorry, from Wasps to Bristol.
Yeah. Massive, massive shake-ups everywhere.
Mm.
I just want to take this conversation off on a quick tangent, and I'll edit this out if you don't want me to continue with it. But I was chatting on Twitter. I'm not going to hit the button.
That cesspit.
Yeah, what? To a guy who was talking about the Premiership not being a viable business model because they lose money. Do you think it needs? Do you think the Premiership needs to be profitable? Is my basic question.
Honest answer is probably not. Yes. So I will reference. I know I've referenced this multiple times in the past, but I will reference a very good book that I think everyone should read, Soccernomics, which even if you don't really care about football, soccer, it's very, very good. It explains sport and business and sport and things like Moneyball and lots of other things. And that, so it highlights the fact that from the 80s to where we are now, although the book was written about 5 years ago, the revenue of Premiership or Premier League football clubs increased 100 times from what was very small businesses to what are still relatively small businesses, but much, much bigger. And profits didn't increase at all because it was just a way of funneling money to the players.
Mm.
But that doesn't really matter because if you are a very wealthy man, someone like Nigel Ray,
yep,
or Bruce Craig,
yep,
and you have your fingers in lots of different pies, you will be making a lot of money from other things. And the fact that you own a rugby club or a football club will make those other businesses more attractive and give you more ways of networking and more people want to do business with you. So that one business standalone doesn't necessarily need to make money as long as the consequences are, you believe the consequences are, your other businesses are doing very well.
Yeah, I tend to agree with this now, which is I don't think the Premiership will ever make money. And let's not think necessarily of the Premiership, but let's think of other clubs. Throughout England, Wales, Scotland, almost every club has got a wealthy benefactor behind it. Usually the chairman, whether it be whoever it is. Wasn't Seti Parker builder?
Yeah, yeah. H. Smith and Sons.
Yeah. Like, there's always someone behind it.
Good builder.
And I think it,
very good.
Yeah, they basically, they do it because they enjoy it or because, like you say, it's good for networking.
But so, with all that said, I don't think it's impossible that the Premiership will make money. And I think, really, they're on the right route for it because the way that you're going to make money is both through more fans going to games, which some clubs can't really have more fans going to games because they're constantly a sellout, although you can start charging more.
Yep. Bath model, as I've had
Bath model
many, many times.
Yeah. Fewer seats, more money, yep, more expensive seats. And TV. And the more competitive the league is, the more games people will want to watch because the more big games, the more historic rivalries there are in that league. And so the more people are willing to pay for TV rights, which we have already seen.
Yeah.
The TV rights are increasing and increasing. So my view is you don't have to make money. I very conceivably see that in, say, 5 years' time, if rugby keeps going on the same model and Premiership keeps going on the same model, you might see a flip where kind of instead of only 20% of the teams making money, you might see 60, 70% of the teams making
money. Yeah, I'll tell you another thing as well, because just on this same sort of conversation, it was made up like, should rugby be at the mercy just of millionaires, a millionaire's whim? And I don't even see it like that. In fact, I think one of the best guarantees of rugby clubs being run well is the fact that if you are a very wealthy individual, the idea that your reputation will be tarnished by what you did to this club by, pulling the cash out or selling the ground.
Yeah,
or
stripping the assets.
Yeah, all this nonsense, which people that don't necessarily understand business talk about, it just isn't really an option. In fact, if anything, if you love rugby that much, you want to plough your children's inheritance into it, maybe it's in fairly good hands. Just a thought.
The Exeter Chiefs have just tweeted.
Ooh, yes. Oh, yes. So that killed the 13 minutes. Was prattling on
new
about...
New contracts for Jack Noll, Henry Slade, Luke Cowan-Dickey. 2-year deals.
2 years, is that it? Hmm. All right.
Not entirely surprising.
Great.
I would be surprised if those three left and went anywhere else. Because they're right, peak age, they'll have another 6-8 years of England, potentially.
Yeah. And also,
if play the cards right.
I would be amazed if Exeter don't have some young kids snapping at their heels anyway.
They've only ever known Devon, those guys, Devon and Cornwall, in Jack Noll's case. And Henry Slade, I don't know if he's with someone, but he was you know, basically being a bit unlucky in love for such a devilishly
handsome... Henry Slade is unlucky in love?
For such a devilishly handsome man.
Is he single?
I don't know if he is now, but he was a while back.
I'm going to say, if he's single, he's remarkably not... lucky in
yes,
love.
Yes. to be a 25, 26-year-old Henry Slade.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word.
That is lucky.
Imagine, but imagine him in Manchester.
Ooh,
instead of
yes.
Devon. Instead of Exeter. I went to uni in Exeter, and I've been back there
since. And you've been in Manchester, so you know, it sounds like a pest.
And thought it's an incredible... when you go back there, having lived in a city for Manchester for the last however many 12 years or whatever, Exeter is tiny. So.
Yeah, you've really lived in like the pick of the rugby small towns, Exeter.
Exeter, Bath and now, Manchester.
You've not done Worcester, that's a pretty small town.
Yeah. Gloucester would be the other one.
Yeah, Gloucester's not massive, is it?
No.
Neither's Northampton, really.
No. You're right, I've lived in Northampton as well.
Have you?
For about 9 months.
Doing what?
I was working, it was my first radio gig, and I was living in Northampton in the week, just off the Wellingborough Road, where all the rugby players go for coffee, and then I was driving back to Bath, where I was living, at weekends.
Nice. Well, I lived in Richmond, but not near Harlequins. And I thought I was going to move to Richmond near Harlequins. Turns out it was Richmond, North Yorkshire. I only realised that when I stood up and said, thank you. I said, tomorrow we'll be driving to North Yorkshire.
I did have a chuckle as I was driving from Newcastle to Leicester and saw Richmond and just had a laugh.
6 months there, played one game for Darlington. Thanks, lads. I do appreciate that, actually. Yeah. Devastating.
Any other business?
No, I don't think so. I think we've...
And we don't have any... We haven't to talk about next weekend's games. It's Premiership Rugby Cup.
Couldn't care less.
Although, do watch on BT Sports. It'll be great.
Are you going to be working Premiership Cup?
Yeah, Bristol versus...
Isn't it weird that you're going to be the highlight of a rugby broadcast?
That's not weird.
Well, it's standard, isn't it? Even more of a highlight of a of a rugby broadcast.
Bristol versus Exeter.
There'll be more people turning in to watch you. Two, then there will be to watch the rugby.
No, but the Premiership Rugby Cup's done very well, and you've got Bristol v Exeter, two proud rugby hotbeds. It'll be good.
And yeah, I do like
a message, isn't he?
I'll probably give myself a week off of watching like 3+ 80-minute games, just to prepare for the Six Nations. But I will. I always like seeing the team sheets just to see.
Is there any Pro 14 on? Obviously, they take the week off before an international.
Well, there won't be any good players playing.
I don't think there is any games.
But
I'll just check.
Next weekend will be our Six Nations preview.
There is there? There's we should really talk about that.
There's a full schedule of Pro 14.
No, because they're not going to play any good players in it. So
no, they're not.
If they can't be bothered to pick any decent players, I can't be bothered to talk about it.
So it is the Egg Chasers Bowl.
Oh, is it?
Ulster Benetton.
Excellent.
And also, what should be a phenomenal game, Leinster Scarlets.
Ugh.
Will not be a phenomenal game.
No, it won't be. But the Egg Chaser Bowl is it?
Yeah, only a few players missing potentially.
Yeah, that could be a good one.
Dean Budd and the boys, I expect to. Oh, sorry. Talking of irrelevant rugby, there is one thing we should mention before we go. Northampton winning
111-3.
Okay, they have not only have they cost Timisoara Saracens their soul. And 40 grand.
Yeah.
They've also put 111 points on them.
That massive fine has really helped Romanian rugby. It's been a real boost.
Yeah.
They've learned their lesson from it.
Like the last time a rugby club was abused this badly by another rugby club, it was Saracens abusing Northampton. It's even worse than that.
So. And on that, we will see you next weekend for the Six Nations preview podcast and Let the Boys Play.
Let the Boys Play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.